Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. New York's Assembly and Senate are expected to release their own budget plans early next week. Both houses say they plan to restore school aid reductions proposed by Governor Kathy Hochul. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Hochul wants to make changes to what's known as the state's foundation aid formula. It's used for determining the distribution of state aid to schools. She would end the practice of hold harmless. That guarantees that no school district receives less money than it did the previous year. She also wants to alter the way inflation is calculated. It would result in less money for some schools this year. The proposal has drawn bipartisan opposition. Analysis by the Senate Democrats' fiscal team estimated schools could lose over $400 million in aid. Senate Leader Andrea Stork-Cousins says the reductions would have a massive impact on schools.
Almost half of the school districts in the state will be receiving less funding than they would have anticipated. We're very, very concerned about that.
Senate Education Chair Shelley Mayer spoke at a news conference that also included the Teachers Union, the School Boards Association, and the PTA, among others. She says lawmakers can't allow the cuts to go forward.
I am very confident that my colleagues in the Senate majority will stand to fully reject the cuts the governor has proposed.
Republicans, who are in the minority party in both houses, are also opposed. GOP Senator Jim Todisco, the ranking member of the Senate Education Committee and a former high school teacher, says students are still recovering from the effects of the pandemic and continue to need special mental health and other services initiated in the past couple of years.
We had a little something called COVID. Our kids sat in the kitchen, many of them, in front of a TV camera on a computer while their educators were miles away on another one. Didn't work. If you look at what happened, there's developmental backstepping.
Hochul is defending her proposals. She says for the past 2 years, there were record increases in school spending as she fulfilled a nearly two-decades-old court order to fully fund education. She says schools also benefited from one-time federal pandemic relief aid packages. She says no one should expect that level of spending to continue.
I assume rational people have understood that can't happen. So it is not a cut when you compare us to where we were before I took office, and it's still a huge increase. And so, but I understand the passions behind this. I understand the desire for people to stir this up.
Hochul says she is setting aside an additional $100 million to help make adjustments for schools that would lose significant funding under her plan if the hold harmless provision is ended. But she says the number of school-age children in the state is declining, and the school aid should change accordingly.
Are we really going to be locked into a formula just because it has been done that way for a long time? And I'll never accept that as a satisfactory answer on how I do anything in state government.
Hochul's budget director, Blake Washington, in an interview with Public Radio, says his office and the Senate and Assembly fiscal committees recently reevaluated tax revenue collections. They found that the state has $1.3 billion more dollars coming in than originally anticipated. Washington says his office will be talking with lawmakers about potential restoration of school aid and other items.
Absolutely. And we'll be looking forward to working with the legislature to do just that.
The Senate and Assembly say they will present their budget plans on Monday. After that, they have 3 weeks until the budget is due on April 1st. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York state government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week, I sat down with Assemblymember Sarah Hanna Shrestha, a Democratic socialist, and we talked about the problem with education funding in New York.
We need our schools to be properly funded. A lot of the expenses are coming out of, you know, people's property taxes that they cannot afford. We need the wealthier to take the share of funding
these
schools.
Let me stop you right there, because this is going to be a big fight, the whole harmless.
Yes.
Identifying that there are some places, because the money comes out of the property tax, they're going to be more wealthy. Schools on Long Island, for example. But there are going to be other places in poor communities where there's no property tax base to fund that. And so you see where the inequity lies. We had lawsuits by the Campaign for Fiscal Equity. New York didn't follow the ruling. Then it tried to follow the ruling. Now we're looking at hold harmless, which would say, hey, there are these other districts that really need more, and you don't necessarily need to get more this year because you have enough. But I wonder if the funding of education, the formula is wrong to begin with, that we don't fund it out of the general fund and we rely on property taxes.
Ideally, we don't rely on property taxes because it creates inequity in schools, and because we don't want our public education to be ever feel so desperate to provide the services that they need. And in terms of stabilizing prices, really, people's income should not go primarily to just surviving. You know, somebody recently on Twitter said the expression cost of living is a strange expression because there's a cost attached to living. We don't want people to be ideally paying more than 25% of their income towards housing. We don't want people to be paying so much towards healthcare and still not get comprehensive coverage in return. And we don't want all of the basic needs to be out of reach for people. We need to invest in public education and good union jobs because those are opportunities for people. We need to invest in treatment. We need to make treatments more accessible because people need a system in which they can stabilize and really, you know, fulfill their actual potential. Right now, we are stunting people's potentials by putting them in dire situations.
We're speaking with Assemblymember Sarah Hanna Shrestha, a Democratic socialist who represents the 103rd district in New York State. Yeah, education, healthcare, the climate, so that we can survive and mitigate the problems that we're experiencing right now with the storms and the flooding. The idea that if you were a CEO, we'll take a business model for a second, you would think, and we haven't done this in many cases, you would value the worker the most because if they were well-educated and you kept them healthy with good health insurance, right, and you made sure that all the infrastructure around them was safe, boy, you might have a more efficient organization and it might even be more successful. But it seems like we go the other way, that the human being isn't valued as much as, you know, the profits that are going to be made, for example, for the shareholders that in this country are become more valued than the human being on the lower level.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall workers are seen as dispensable. And if they are kept feeling quite desperate, the assumption is the workers need the job more than the job needs workers. But, you know, we see this playing out very dangerously, especially in the field of care workers, whether it's hospital workers or home care workers or direct service providers. These are the folks that are really, really stretched, experiencing burnout. We don't have adequate staffing in our hospitals, people who need home care. But it's a very twisted logic to have an economy that deprioritizes people who do the most essential work, which is providing care. That has always been undermined, underpaid, but no robot is going to provide the kind of care that a nurse does when maybe the nurse holds your hand when you're going through something. And, you know, we see the intersection of everything. Speaking about people's money going further, I spoke to a few hospital workers recently, and what are the things that they deal with? Housing costs, childcare issues. It's all the same. And then I recently heard of somebody in my district saying that they have direct service providers who've had to sleep in their car. So people who need to do the work also don't have the housing and the stability that they need to be able to do the work. So why would they continue to do this demanding, stressful work when they can just take another retail job and that's going to pay the same and they will go home less mentally taxed and exhausted, you know? So it's all about prioritizing well-being and investing in those priorities.
That's Assemblymember Sarah Hanna Shrestha, a Democratic socialist who represents the 103rd Assembly District. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. With the state budget due in less than a month, students, professors, and New York State lawmakers are pushing for more aid for the SUNY and CUNY systems. WAMC's Alexander Babby with more.
Higher education advocates say Democratic New York Governor Kathy Hochul's $233 billion budget proposal does not do enough to promote positive educational outcomes across the state. Speaking to a crowd of SUNY and CUNY professors and students at the state capitol in Albany, Assemblywoman Anna Kellis says the situation is dire.
The base funding of community colleges in 2019 was $453 million. You know what it is? Flat? And this is, we're supposed to be thankful for this. 417 from 453. We have 9 community colleges that are months away from being closed down, told that they are not financially viable.
The Southern Tier Democrat says a proposed $6 million cut to higher education opportunity programs and a $19 million decrease in funding for independent colleges would endanger educational opportunities. United University Professions President Fred Cole, a SUNY Cobleskill professor and WAMC commentator, agrees.
What we'd like to see is $139 million directly allocated to the 18 campuses in SUNY, the state-operated campuses, that have deficits right now. Last year, there was money put into budget, records amounts, that could have been used to solve the deficits that the Cuomo budgets created. The chancellor decided to go a different route.
Cole says program cuts would also harm the local economies that have formed around campuses. He says he doesn't believe Governor Hochul understands the situation she inherited from former Governor Andrew Cuomo, a fellow Democrat.
You can't just say, well, I'll have one good budget, and that's it. SUNY lost over $7 billion controlling for inflation since 2008 in the Great Recession. That's not going to be overcome by a budget that improved things by a couple hundred million. You've got to invest in these institutions.
UUP is a WAMC underwriter. On the CUNY side, David Gerwin, who chairs Queens College's Secondary Education Department, says a $180,000 budget shortfall to his program threatens his ability to run student teaching in the fall.
If you run a section of 7 students with one supervisor so that person can make 28 visits to a bunch of different schools, that's $6,000 per section. And I need to run for 200 students, I need to run about 30 sections. So that ends up costing $180,000, which is why, if I'm short $180,000, I have to choose between full student teaching in the spring alone or trying to find some way to make fall and spring work.
Students say they're feeling the crunch as well. Liza Estany is double majoring in anthropology and media studies with a philosophy minor at SUNY Purchase.
We need better quality classrooms, and I don't know, we need more money so that we can get more enrollment up, we can get better teachers. There's so limited teachers in every department. It's been a real struggle. Teachers are overworked, they're underpaid. They're advising 10, 20, 30 students with no support.
Estany adds there are shortfalls with accessibility as well, saying dorms, which were built in the 1960s and 70s, are not suitable for students who need additional accommodations.
It's like a can of sardines, you know, it's very locked together.
Aurora Sakelianos is a first-year history major and says Purchase is pouring money into the wrong places.
Most of our students are receiving TAP or Excelsior in some way. So it's interesting that it's a place that's serving underfunded students supposedly, but a lot of people are struggling to even stay in school at this point because TAP is like a joke. It's like $400. It makes no difference.
Democratic Assemblywoman Monique Chandler Waterman of Brooklyn's 58th District says, as a CUNY grad and mother of four, navigating the aid system poses challenges for students and parents.
You should be just focusing on your studies, not how can I pay for school? Why is it so difficult? How am I going to eat? How am I going to get my books? How am I going to do this stuff? This is our future. The person that's going to cure whatever disease that's not cured now is sitting here. It behooves us to invest in you and making sure you can focus on the genius you are, the president that you're going to be, the scientist that you're going to be.
In a statement, a spokesperson for the governor says, quote, Governor Hochul is fully committed to ensuring students have access to affordable, high-quality public education and has increased investment in higher education by 17% since taking office. The governor's executive budget builds on these investments to SUNY and CUNY with $1.2 billion in new capital funding and $207 million in operating funding. We will continue working with the legislature on a budget that serves the needs of all New Yorkers, end quote. SUNY Purchase declined to comment, referring a request from WAMC to SUNY Central, which also declined to comment. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Alexander Babby.
New York U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand pulled together a bipartisan group of lawmakers in Dutchess County to call on the House to pass a bill aimed at cracking down on illegal fentanyl dealers. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King has more.
The Senate passed the Fend Off Fentanyl Act last month as part of a national security package, but Gillibrand says it has since stalled in the House. Speaking at the County Law Enforcement Center in Poughkeepsie, the Democrat urged New York's congressional delegation to push the bill through.
It is outrageous that they are not responding to the cries and pleas of their constituents in New York who are desperate to hold these criminal networks accountable.
Among those who joined Gillibrand Saturday were Congressman Pat Ryan, State Senator Rob Rollison, Assembly Members Jonathan Jacobson and Dee Dee Barrett, and Dutchess County Executive Sue Serino. Fentanyl is a synthetic opioid that, according to the CDC, is up to 50 times stronger than heroin. A single dose can be lethal, and when mixed with other drugs illegally sold on the street, fentanyl becomes undetectable by taste, smell, or sight, meaning many people who die of fentanyl-related overdoses aren't fully aware of what they're taking. Of the 106 opioid overdose deaths in Dutchess County in 2022, the county says 98 of them involved fentanyl. Here's Serino.
You know, so often that we hear fentanyl is not a problem where we live. It's only a big city issue, right? But the truth is, it is a problem right where we live. Fentanyl is everywhere, and it is killing our communities.
Timothy Doyle, director of Timothy P. Doyle Funeral Home in Poughkeepsie, says he's seen firsthand how fentanyl can shatter families. In November 2021, his son Sean lost a long battle with addiction when he acquired drugs laced with fentanyl. Doyle says the coroner found so much fentanyl in Sean's system that he believes Sean was killed instantaneously. He was 34.
We see this every single day in our business. I have a young lady that passed away last couple of days, and again this morning I was doing the paperwork, and what did she die of? Fentanyl intoxication.
Gillibrand says the Drug Enforcement Administration seized more than 386 million illegal doses of fentanyl across the U.S. last year. In February, authorities in New York busted a ghost gun and drug trafficking network in LaGrangeville involving more than 5,000 counterfeit oxycodone pills laced with fentanyl. The Fend Off Fentanyl Act would specifically declare a national emergency over the international trafficking of fentanyl and require President Biden to sanction key members of drug cartels responsible for illegally bringing the drug into the U.S. The DEA says the majority of illegal fentanyl is made with chemical supplies from China and manufactured in Mexico. The bill would also allow the Treasury Department to implement special measures to combat fentanyl-related money laundering and give the proceeds from property in the U.S. forfeited by cartel members to law enforcement.
It's time to crack down on the criminal drug networks that do what they do for profit.
Meantime, Michael Ballas, director of the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County, says it's important for individuals to acquire and get trained in administering the opioid overdose-reversing drug naloxone, also called Narcan. Just like CPR, he says you never know when you might come across someone who needs help.
It can be effective. What I've seen from my own personal experiences and also from other professionals working in the field, no longer is it one Narcan that can work. A lot of times it's two, three, four doses of Narcan. So they're even putting more than one dose in a pack of Narcan now. It used to be one, now it's two.
The CDC says signs of an overdose include loss of consciousness, a limp body, constricted pupils, shallow breathing, choking, and clammy or discolored skin. Balla says anyone who finds a loved one unresponsive should call 911, lay them on their side, and administer Narcan if they suspect an opioid overdose, even if they're not entirely sure. Narcan is safe to use even if a recipient is not experiencing an overdose. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jesse King.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Fallout from a New York Attorney General's report that found Saratoga Springs officials unconstitutionally targeted protesters continues. The Legislative Gazette's Aaron Shella Levine with more.
More than 2 years after WAMC broke the news that the office of New York State Attorney General Tish James was investigating the city's interactions with Black Lives Matter demonstrators, a final report released last month paints a portrait of intimidation and targeting of BLM protesters by former city officials. BLM organizers held a press conference in the wake of the report's release, calling for accountability from current and past officials and criticizing current Democratic Public Safety Commissioner Tim Cole for saying the report had gross inaccuracies. Before the final report was released to the public, Cole released a statement that claimed there was misleading wording within the first pages of a preliminary version shared with city officials. Tuesday night, Saratoga Springs residents asked for an apology from Cole, alleging his intent was to deflect from the findings of the report and criticize the Attorney General before the report was publicly released. Kristen Dart, who ran against Cole in November election as an independent, was among those who spoke during the city council meeting.
The first thing that was done was an attempt to discredit him. And you weren't even honest about who you were critiquing, because heaven forbid we use the word and. Your statement could have read that SSPD and the Saratoga County Sheriff's Department violated the civil rights of protesters. The first thing that should have happened was an apology. Apologies cost no money, but apologies are absolutely needed to make progress.
A public comment period was extended beyond the 30-minute limit as residents lined up to speak. Rebecca Allen Lynch commented on what the AG report concluded were baseless arrests and illegal harassment of protesters.
Was it intended to silence? Definitely. Was it unprofessional, unethical, amoral, and anti-democratic? Undoubtedly. I would ask that we all sit with what this means when individuals with power wield it to silence dissent, when they fabricate cases and use selective prosecution to target political adversaries, when our elected officials will not hold themselves and others accountable for undermining our democracy and the humanity of others. I will hold the remainder of my time for us to reflect, and who knows, maybe apologize.
Cole, a registered Democrat elected with the Republican endorsement in November, explained his initial reaction, which he says was to clarify some of the language within the report.
And if you're going to make an allegation after months of misconduct against a police agency, you need to get the agency correct. And I sat down with the Attorney General's office, and they made the correction that, in fact, it was two other agencies that fired pepper balls, as well as having an MRAP there.
You invited that.
New York State Police and the Saratoga County Sheriff's Office assisted the City of Saratoga Springs Police Department in response to a July 2020 Black Lives Matter counter-demonstration, where pepper balls and an armored vehicle were deployed to control crowds. BLM protesters blocked Broadway following a pro-police Back the Blue demonstration. Democratic City Finance Commissioner Manita Sangvi responded to the angered residents.
We are actively working on this. We are listening. We do hear you. We do understand what you have been through, and we accept the AG's report. It may not be perfect. Maybe there's a comma issue. but we understand what you're saying, that the essence of the report says a lot more than just that piece.
Democratic Public Works Commissioner Jason Golub also spoke in favor of continuing conversations regarding the report and its recommendations, with some activist pushback.
These are issues that have been here for a long time, and it's enough. We need to acknowledge what has happened. We need to take those recommendations
seriously. You guys have the power to do this!
Please, we listen to you. And I'm willing to work with anyone and everyone to do that, but it has to be together.
The council unanimously passed a tolling agreement with James's office, giving additional time for further investigations into the city's mistreatment of protesters. Republican Mayor John Safford, who ran on a platform of restoring order to City Hall, did not answer activists' calls for an apology. There is no requirement that city councilors must respond during public comment period.
Our policy is not to react at all. We don't react to the speakers at all. But we're here to listen to what they have to say. That was a problem I think we've had in the past.
The city is facing lawsuits from BLM organizers the AG found were unfairly and unconstitutionally targeted. Safford's comments on the report have been limited. In a statement after its release, he said the city would learn from it. Safford spoke to reporters after the meeting.
And we have been listening to that emotion for a while. There are practicalities, this whole thing that we're trying to protect the city as much as we can, but to hear what the people are saying.
Reporting for the Southern Adirondack Bureau on the campus of Skidmore College, this is Aaron Shallow Levine.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York State Public News Network. You can listen to the Legislative Gazette anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2410. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.